This podcast is brought to you by Microsoft Teams. When there's more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Build your franchise around that guy.
Damn straight.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
They ain't never seen this, Cam.
Play action, screen right. It's intercepted. Kenny Young.
You're going to stick with Cam next week?
The Rich Eisen Show.
Cam's our quarterback.
Today's guests. Host of the Half Forgotten History podcast, Trey Wingo. From NBC Sports Boston, Tom Curran. ESPN host, Bomani Jones. Golden Globe winning actor, Kevin Bacon. And now... it's Rich Eisen.
All right, welcome to this dead solid perfect Friday edition of the Rich Eisen Show. My name is Rich Eisen. I am your humble host. I am still the best dad ever, 6 months running. And pleased that we are here with you after the kickoff to week 14. I'm here, you're there. We've got four guests calling in here. After the Thursday night opener here in Los Angeles, just up the road, Chris Brockman.
Hey, Rich Eisen.
Sitting at his position next to Mike Del Tufo,
hey,
sitting
Rich.
At his position. Settling into his position is social media grandmaster of the Rich Eisen Show, TJ Jefferson. Good to see you, TJ.
Kaboom. Guess okay. Who stepped in the room?
You did. Dom Bowie, if you wouldn't mind punching up Chris Brockman's camera. There you go. Chris Brockman today, as you can see, is not dressed as Cam Newton.
No.
But rather, he's dressed as a transplanted Patriot fan here in Los Angeles, getting set to, when fans return, sell his Rams season tickets to somebody to make him some money to buy him a new zip-up sweatshirt. That's how he's dressed today. I know that's a mouthful, but I think that's how you're dressed today.
That was a lot.
The day that Tom Brady... announced he wasn't coming back. What did I tell you? What did I tell you here on this very edition of the show? This is way before Peacock was a twinkle in our eye, sir.
That's a long time ago. This is mid-March.
It's mid-March, which feels like it was 19 Marches ago, but that's the nature of 2020.
He said, welcome to the rest of us.
Welcome to the rest of us.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know at the time that entering week 14, my version of this is this is us for me would be still winless, but... yeah. I think you've kind of picked up my gist. Welcome to the rest of us that all of the wondrous years of water skiing behind the yachts that Tom Brady would provide you as a fan, that those were going to go away and you were going to wind up losing football games that you're not used to losing. And what I kind of meant also was what we saw this very week in Los Angeles after the Rams dismantled the New England Patriots 24-3. And the dismantling of the Patriots last night was jarring. Because the welcome to the rest of us is not just the losing of games that you sometimes would win, but the inconsistency, just the awful inconsistency. Like, say... go out to Los Angeles, play two games in a span of 5 days, win 145-0, and then lose the other 24-3.
Yeah.
Like, where was the team that won 45-0 in that very building? That's how, as you know, quickly things can change in the National Football League. 1 minute you're up, next minute you're down. You've been a pauper, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a opponent, a king. You've been up, you're down, you're over and out. And you know one thing, that's life.
That's what people say.
Without Tom Brady, that's what people say. That's what people say. Yeah. That's life.
That's life. I hate it. It sucks.
And welcome to the rest of us.
Terrible.
1 week you win 45-0. Next week you lose 24-3. And then the game that you lose 24-3, this is not one of the games that you see from New England. Because the things you see from teams that don't win football games, that are not winning football teams, are mistakes. You saw the rarities of jumping off sides to give a first down to the Rams, who call timeout after attempting to get that penalty on 4th and inches right inside the 5-yard line. They don't jump. Timeout. Out of the timeout, they jump. Which led to a Cooper Kupp touchdown on a beautiful throw from Jared Goff. It's also not being able to stop the run. We saw that with the Dallas Cowboys this week. That is something you cannot do in the NFL, is get beat by the run over and over again, and Cam Akers is the one to do it. Just when we talked about, hey, you send a rookie Bill Belichick's way and he's going to totally destroy your will like he did to Justin Herbert on Sunday. 5 days later, Cam Akers with the best rookie rushing performance for the Rams, breaking Jerome Bettis's mark, with the best rookie rushing performance ever against Bill Belichick. 171 yards, most by a rookie this season. Cam Akers, we were talking yesterday about how the Rams caused so many fantasy headaches because you don't know, is it Malcolm Brown's day? Is it Daryl Henderson's day? It looks like it's Cam Akers' job. It really does. It's next week's the Jets. But Cam Newton looked terrible. Offense looked anemic. Fourth and goal, and they're running that quarterback sneak because they got what? They got nothing else. Yeah. I mean, they got, what else we got here? It's so rare to see. It's so rare to see the seven losses New England now has, most since 2002. And there's maybe more to come. They're at the Dolphins next week. And if that happens, that means the Patriots would not have their first winning season since before Tom Brady. It'll be a non-winning season in New England if they lose their next game at the Dolphins. And you know Brady had problems winning there with the Patriots. Cam's not going to have an easy time there. So rare to see, and it's time to, you know, it's time to start wondering what's going on there. What about turning the page? You know, Belichick earlier this season did mention how they were in cap purgatory, in a way. They sold out to win those Super Bowl seasons in the final years of Brady, and they're now, it's now time for the credit card bill to come due, and they got to pay it. Right now they're paying on layaway. Four days after winning 45-0. 6-6. Is this the time that the Patriots are turning the corner? Can Belichick work his magic? They'd won 4 of 5, and then this happened. Cam didn't finish the game. In comes Jared Stidham. And one would think 6-7. Season is essentially wrapped. I mean, if the Bills and Dolphins lose this week somehow, right? Let's say the Bills and Dolphins lose this week somehow. Both of them. Steelers win, Chiefs win. Entirely possible. Dolphins are both taking on the 1 and 2 seeds, respectively, in the AFC. You're 6-7, and the Dolphins are now a mere 8-5. About to try and personally fork stick you the next week. You're 2 back. And the Bills would be 9-4. Division's still toast. Do you have a shot at the wild card? Well, you're sniffing it at 6-7. You've got 2 teams a game in front of you. Let's say the Raiders and Ravens both lose. Let's say they both lose. The problem is the Raiders would lose. The Colts would go to 9-5. The Ravens would be 7-6, still a game in front of you. And the team that would be closest to you on their this best case scenario would be the Dolphins at 8-5. And I just told you, you're visiting them next week. I mean, this does not look good. It looks bleak. And normally you'd say, well, this is the time a team would turn to the young kid that they have on their roster at quarterback, and let's see what we have in Jared Stidham. And I know that the Patriots decided earlier in the year to go sign Cam because they had, I guess, seen enough of Stidham in this pandemic season in which you don't have the on-field work and the OTAs and training camp. And you knew when they were signing Cam at the end of June, there was going to be no training camp. You could sense it. Belichick's no dummy. Mike Reese of ESPN, right? Covers the Patriots for many, many years.
Yes, he does.
Asked Belichick the million-dollar question about his quarterback, if Cam is going to be the guy moving forward. This is what happened.
Bill, I wanted to ask you about just the quarterback. Are you going to stick with Cam next week at quarterback?
Yeah, great question, Mike. I'm really glad you asked that. Cam's our quarterback.
All right.
That's that.
I'm just going to sense here, my Spidey sense, my hosting Spidey sense, yeah, that Bill didn't really appreciate the question. But, you know, I guess you're sticking with Cam because he gives you the best chance to win.
I guess.
All of the times that I sit here and say, well, the head coach knows his team best, who better to know his team best than Bill Belichick?
Right.
That's what it means. Yeah, we're not going into Miami with Jarrett Stidham and beating Brian Flores and that team. Cam's just going to have to ball out. You're going to have to figure something out. You know? You have to figure something out.
Or there's nothing to figure out. This is what it is. This is it.
Welcome to the rest of us. Yeah.
So here's a question for you guys. Last night, Bradshaw said he kind of put it on Cam. Now, to me, it seems like a lot of those play calls are a little iffy. What do you put this
Look,
on?
Here's the deal. Cam doesn't run the Patriots offense. He wasn't the fit for the Patriots offense. That's not his game, and he has, on occasion, played it well enough.
And he put it on Cam because he said,
if we're going to sit here and say Brady's still not comfortable in the offense in Tampa and Brady's the GOAT with all those rings, what do you think Cam's going to be without any OTAs and any practice at all, any preseason at all? Yeah, you now need to run what we do around here, and he's talented enough to run an offense regardless of what it is, but it's going to take some time. I mean, in the short passing game, how many times does he just air? He just zips it in.
And like I said,
he's got a big arm. I don't know if he's suited for the way that they run this offense, and it's just a bad mix, and it wins football games from time to time, and you have to give credit to the fact. And again, I know the New England Patriots are the bright, shiny object because it is what happens in the first year of the Brady-Belichick marriage being dissolved, what happens to both teams. And we've got Tampa coming off a bye at 7-5, and the conversation being Brady's still not comfortable, and are they going to run more plays that he's comfortable with? And Bruce Arians has said, well, he's picking the plays now, and they're coming out of a bye, and if they are still looking out of sync and rusty coming out of their bye week against the Vikings, who are right behind them at 6-6, we'll be talking about that bright, shiny object. And I know that this is why we're talking about the Patriots. But once again, the Los Angeles Rams win a football game in dominating fashion and impressive fashion. And we're talking about the other team or the other teams like the Saints, the Packers. And we're not talking about a Rams team that is stout on defense and stout in the running game. And loses their left tackle, their Walter Payton man of the year, stud leader in the locker room guy, and Andrew Whitworth, who apparently is going to still have a chance to come back this year, lose him and still jam the ball down the Patriots' throat with a rookie. And Jared Goff using the boots and the play action and the coach and Sean McVay switching it up with a personnel group that he switched up on New England, knowing that they've got a short week and they break a tendency and they jam two tight ends and two receivers and one back right down the Patriots' throat. And the coach was on his game and the quarterback was on his game and the rookie running back was on his game and the defense was on its game. And we're talking about the Patriots. But that's a 9-win team that is going to be in first place by the end of the week, I would say, regardless of the result. But Seattle and Jamal Adams are welcoming the Jets into the Pacific Northwest. And, oh, boy. And then the Jets, I assume, are not going back home. They're going to stay on the left coast and come down here and take on the Rams. So you got a 10-win team, basically, in the Rams going into their final 2 weeks of the season, taking on, right here in Los Angeles, the Arizona Cardinals to finish up, but that Week 16 game at Seattle being for pretty much the entire NFC West shooting match. And depending on the Packers and the Saints, how they fare over the next 2 weeks, maybe for an even better seed than what the Rams have as the 3 seed. And go ahead and overlook them because that's Bambi at quarterback and that's a running back that's a rookie, but we don't know who the running back is. And, you know, who'd you call him? Bobby Trees, Robert Woods,
Bobby Trees, man.
Cooper Kupp, and all these tight ends. From Higbee to Munt, and by the way, that's the depth chart, right? With an Everett in between, and And offensively, you're wondering how they put up, how can they put up 30, 35, 40 like they used to? Well, that's not their team anymore. It's 99's team. We're all paying rent in Aaron Donald's world. 1.5 sacks last night. Don Bowie, would you mind putting up the graphic of Aaron Donald as we're seeing him sacking Cam Newton last night?
Made it look easy.
Number 99 in your program, now number 4 on the all-time list of most sacks in a season, in the first 7 seasons of a career. His 1.5 moved him past Von Miller into 4th place on that list behind. Stop me if you heard them before. Well, don't, because you've heard of them before. Derek Thomas, DeMarcus Ware, Reggie White. By the way, Reggie White had 110 sacks in his first 7 seasons of the National Football League. And we're not even counting what he had as a USFL player before he joined the NFL. I mean, Reggie freaking White. Oh, my God. I mean,
that's unbelievable.
What an absolute, total, complete, dominant, well, he's a minister of defense beast. 110 sacks in his first 7 seasons.
My God.
But Aaron Donald's in that company.
That's 25 plus more sacks.
And then you rush the passer with him, and clearly he requires a lot of attention. You have that up front, and Jalen Ramsey saying, I got that guy. Remove that person from the afternoon or evening. You can just remove that person, whether they're DeAndre Hopkins or N'Keal Harry. I mean, so you have to say this is what happens when the Patriots have this offense and Cam's still learning it, or Cam's still, you know, maybe diminishing. I mean, he's still a talented guy with a ton of physical prowess at the position. But when you go up against a team like the Rams in 2020, the way that they are constituted with a young team, youngest team entering the NFL this year, belonging to the Rams roster. Don't forget that. That's the way the Patriots are going to look. So Terry could blame it all on Cam only once, but you also have to look across the way at the team in their Heaven Can Wait uniforms last night and say, yeah. That's the reason. Yeah, it's part of the reason. So, to salud Les Snead and Sean McVay and the rest of that team. They'll beat the Jets. They'll have a 10-win campaign. Seattle will beat the Jets. They'll have a 9-4 record as well. And then Seattle, after beating the Jets, will have to visit the Washington football team while the Rams sit at home and take on the Jets. And like I told you earlier in the season, the Rams put all of their East Coast trips, they had it all jammed on them in the first half of a pandemic season. Rams at Philadelphia week 2, at Buffalo week 3, at Washington week 5, at Miami week 8. The furthest they go out of Los Angeles the rest of the way is up to Seattle. That's it. And how far it is from their doors over the hill, probably in the valley where they live, nearly a Thousand Oaks facility, all the way to just up the road from here for their stadium visit to play a game. That's it. So they're through all the big traveling. Seattle's got to go to the Washington football team week 15. That's what we call a problem. So I like the Rams in the West right now, I'll tell you that. And we'll see what the Packers and Saints look like. You might like the Rams for the whole potential NFC shooting match when it's all said and done. But, you know, then you have to explain what happened against San Francisco. You got to explain that. You could say, I guess it's a division game. You got to explain that. You know? So the Rams have had a couple of head scratchers in this mix. But that's then. This is now. And what happened last night made the Patriots yesterday's news and the Rams today's and maybe January, if not February's news. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. Trey Wingo is going to join us coming up on this program here. We'll talk about the NFL season and the week 14 that's totally dominant. Tom Curran will talk to us about the Patriots' issues and future. But Monty Jones was all over Twitter today about Kyrie Irving's reaction to being fine 25 grand for blowing off the media. I'll tell you one thing you don't want to do in New York, and I know Kyrie is from New Jersey, and he should know this. He's a smart guy. You don't tell the New York media I'm unavailable, especially when, you know, Kevin Durant is your teammate, and Kevin Durant is now healthy to be your teammate, and you've got your new coach in Steve Nash. You can't be unavailable. And his reaction to being unavailable only serves to put more chum in the New York media water, I'll tell you that. And then James Harden, as we know, wants to play for either Milwaukee or Philadelphia or the Nets. And in terms of the Nets, the Rockets have apparently told James Harden, unless we get Durant or Kyrie back, and we'll take Kyrie, you're not going there. So there's lots to talk about with Bomani Jones. And also in terms of basketball, I have, in fact, put together the list of my son, 12-year-old son Xander's NBA Fantasy League roster. I want you guys to be honest. Okay. He wants you to be honest. Okay? That's coming up on this show. Our poll question is beyond dynamite. So the table is now set because it is the day that is the day of the Lufthansa heist, right?
Yeah, the anniversary. Actual anniversary of the actual Lufthansa heist.
So wait till you hear how we have turned this into a sports question.
1970.
And it's also the anniversary of the release of A Few Good Men, right?
Oh, yeah, that's
so
true.
What a day to have Kevin Bacon on the show, too. That's how we're rolling here, four wide on this edition. Five wide to include you at 844-204-RICH. We're back with my buddy, Trey Wingo, welcoming him to the greener grass. Next on the Rich Eisen Show. Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. With Together Mode, you can bring everyone together in one space in the same virtual room. You can bring the power of true collaboration to your projects with whiteboard, drawing, sharing, and building ideas in real time, all on the same page. And with large gallery view, you can see more of your team all at once with up to 49 people on screen, all at the same time. You can even raise your hand virtually so everyone can be seen and heard. When there are more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. Hey, everybody. The Rich Eisen Show store is open. Go to RichEisenStore.com. Be the first on your block with one of these babies. T-shirts, both long and, of course, short sleeve in white or heather gray. We've got hats, people, and, of course, start your day with a cup of Joe and a Rich Eisen Show coffee mug. Go to RichEisenStore.com and shop your head off right now. RichEisenStore.com. Yep, I never thought I'd be saying this. I'm selling mugs. I'm selling hats and shirts and stuff.
Shilling.
Merchandise.
Masks.
Yeah, selling those.
Hats. We got hats.
Selling hats.
You got hats, people.
Got hats. Hats for sale. That's all I'm selling. That's it. Oh, and myself. You know, I'm selling a brand.
Of course you are.
What else am I selling?
But of course you are.
Never thought I'd be saying these sorts of things, but I'm selling stuff, and I'd love for you to have them. And a mug like this is functional. The logo's on either side. And the best part about it is it holds what you put in it. You know what I mean?
No leaks.
And also, it holds the temperature. It's not one of the, you know, it goes, you know, the mug goes straight up, doesn't go out.
Mm-hmm.
So it holds the temperature.
Rich, let's say I have a handful of Reese's Pieces. Would the cup hold those?
It would definitely hold that.
Whoa. Okay.
We've been talking to our radio audience who are joining us right here. We've been talking about our merchandise store, RichEisenStore.com. We're selling a bunch of stuff. Because I own my business. I own the show now. We're here on Peacock, NBC Sports on Peacock, just trying to keep things going. And my next guest is owning his own world. Content is king. He's got his own brand after many, many, many moons on ESPN. And he's joining us here to talk about everything in the National Football League season. He's got his own podcast that's out right now. And here to talk about all that with the grass, green grass growing underneath his feet. It's Trey Wingo. How are you, Trey?
Richard, first of all, it is a delight. And yes, let me just say,
the
best part of waking up is Rich Eisen in your cup.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that,
excited.
Trey. Now,
I got to tell you, my first job in television in the late 80s, I was a page at NBC. And one of the first things they had me do at 30 Rock was work in the NBC store.
Yes.
From the day after Thanksgiving till Christmas Eve without a day off. And we were pushing Today Show mugs, Golden Girls t-shirts, Late Night with David Letterman hats. So I appreciate the enthusiasm with which you were selling those products.
So were you the basis of Kenneth the Page, Trey? Did you have the jacket and everything?
Well, that was the job. I mean, I think that they probably thought of other people besides me.
You sure?
That was the first gig. We were given guided tours of the building, man.
I was an intern for the CBS Evening News, Trey, when Dan Rather and Connie Chung hosted it together. And I was stuck on a desk answering phones and people just complaining because it was the summer of OJ's preliminary trial and they were live with Dan and Connie and they were preempting The Price is Right and all of these soap operas and people were calling up livid and that was my job. And then I would look up and I would watch the intern with chief medical correspondent at the time was Dr. Bob Arnott, if that name rings a bell.
Absolutely.
And his intern was named Melissa Stark, and she was traveling all over the country and doing actual work, and she's, to this day, lords that over me. Stinks.
Well, listen, see, this
stinks.
Always treat your interns with respect.
That's true.
Right? Because
you never know.
We're all sort of gophers and interns.
And pages.
You meet the same people on the way up as you do on the way down.
That's right.
And real quickly, who was that said Reese's Pieces?
That would be T.J. Jefferson, Rich Eisen Show, social media grandmaster.
Okay, Trey. You are the first person in the history of the world to pronounce that Reese's Pieces. It's Reese's Pieces, man.
Oh, really? Yes.
Come on, dude. Like, where are you from that you say Reese's Pieces?
Altoona, Pennsylvania.
That's how we say it.
Having spent 9 months in Allentown, I get it now.
Okay.
Well, that's on the other side of the state.
Hold on. Let me turn this in a proper direction for all of us here, okay? Let's place that in the half-forgotten history of the Rich Eisen Show, Trey. How about that?
Ba-doom-cha! Rich with a win.
Why are you calling your podcast Half-Forgotten History, Trey? What's that all about?
Well, real simple, and thank you for allowing me to talk about that.
You're welcome, Trey.
You know, Rich, if you do this long enough, and you hang around with guys like you hang around with Michael and Kurt and Mooch and all those guys, and I've hung around with, you know, Brewski and Damien and Ryan Clark and Stink and a bunch of other people, Darren Woodson.
Randy Moss.
Half the best stories that you hear never make air. They're all the stuff you talk about when you're in the green room before the camera and the lights go on or the mic is on.
Yes.
Or when you're out to dinner at the Super Bowl and someone drops a bomb story on you over a cocktail or two and you're like, man, we got to tell those stories.
Yes.
So the whole premise of the show is, thanks to our sponsors, State Farm, McDonald's, and Maker's Mark.
Look at you.
We're chopping it up. We're just sitting down talking ball about some of the greatest things in the greatest moments in the game that I know and you probably know, but not everybody else knows.
So there has to still be stories with you just mentioning, you know, the golden arches and things like that. You still have to keep under wraps, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. We had Darren Woodson, and I said, what's the story you can tell about the Cowboys of the 90s without getting yourself or your best friends arrested?
Yes. Well, we told
the
story.
Can you imagine the Cowboys of the 90s in social media?
Oh, my
can you imagine?
God, Trey. Do we tell the Kevin Barlow story that Mooch once told off the air? We actually got on the air because we actually had Matt Willig, the player turned actor. You've seen many times in the old What's in Your Wallet commercials, the Capital One commercials, plays one of the Vikings in it. At any rate, I'll tell this story. What the hell?
Yeah, why not?
It's a new audience on Peacock, too. They might not know it.
Of course.
So Mooch told this story. This is one of those stories that you can't tell on the air, and Mooch would never tell it, refused to tell. He wouldn't tell it because he's, you know, above board, but he has told the story.
Right.
Kevin Barlow, the old running back of the San Francisco 49ers, was homesick a lot, and he was on his cell phone all the time. And one time, Kevin Barlow comes into the office to complain about the fact that Matt Willig and the offensive linemen were so upset by him being on his cell phone all the time, they confiscated it from him and then stuck it where Matt Willig's, the sun does not shine on Matt Willig. Does that make sense to you?
It does.
Well, actually,
that's why they invented phone soap, by the way.
Yes, indeed. Well, I guess the proper preposition for it would be up, which is where they stuck it. And I told the story on the air, had Willig tell this story. Mooch was so upset
that the story was told on the air, especially since the punchline of the story that was confirmed is that Mooch demanded Willig, after demanding if it was true or not, confirming the truth of this sordid tale, made Willig give the phone back to Barlow, who was 60 seconds later seen making a phone call.
Please tell me he had handy wipes.
I don't believe, I don't know.
Well, mid-90s.
That's the story, and I'm sticking to it. That was the story. Well, so you should have Mooch on your show.
Him.
Have Mooch on. He is filled with those stories. Oh,
I plan on it.
Gosh. How are you otherwise, Trey? Because when I left ESPN, Susie was out here working in Los Angeles, you know, covering the Lakers. I went to an All-Star game. People asked me if I was okay. I said, yeah, I can fog up a mirror for you if you want. So how are you doing, Trey?
Look, I'm really good.
And of course you are.
It's fine. It is kind of funny, right? Because it's a job. It's not your life.
Right.
And I told them about a year and a half ago that I just didn't think doing the morning show was my long-term aspiration, and they asked me to do it, and I said, sure. We had a three-year contract, and I said, absolutely, I will do this for 3 years, and then we'll see. And I knew pretty soon into it that it just wasn't what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So I went to them in May or June of 2019 and said, look, I just want to give you guys a heads up because I don't want to leave you hanging, and I don't want to be like a month before the deal is up saying I want to do something else because I feel like that would me being a bad employee. So I just wanted to give you guys as much time as possible that when my deal's up, I'm going to want to do something else. And that apparently was the beginning of my demise.
I only laugh because
I was being a good guy about it. But, whatever.
No, I'm saying, you know, look, what an incredible run you had, man.
Yeah.
I think only half as long a run as you did. I was there for 7 years. And so, you know.
Wait, how long were you there?
Seven, that's it. 7 years.
Dude, I was there 23.
I know.
Jeez, I thought you were there much longer.
No, I was there for, look, you know, I was there for 7 years, 96 to 03, and I've been with NFL Network. This is my 18th season with NFL Network.
That doesn't even seem possible to me, but that's so cool, man.
Well, just look at my hairline, Trey, and it's possible.
Yeah. Well, I could say something, but I won't. But I will say look at my hair, because when you and I worked together, my hair was the same color, and that has
that's
left
true.
The building.
No. You've always had like this Steve Martin look with your hair, Trey. Like your hair has always been prematurely gray in a way, from my recollection.
Now, early 30s, it started to turn. Funny story: Steve Martin actually attended high school in Waco, Texas, where,
yes,
of course, I went to Baylor University, also in Waco.
That's right. Okay, so let's get into who's the best team. Is it the Chiefs? What do you think? Let's talk some ball, Trey. Let's talk some ball.
Yeah,
let's
do it. Until somebody runs out the clock on that dude in the playoffs,
right?
Why would we not say they're the best team? I mean, we saw it three times in the postseason last year. Double-digit leads, doesn't matter. 24 points, doesn't matter. Down 11 in the Super Bowl with 8 minutes to play, third and 15, doesn't matter. So there may be a team that's better, but until someone beats that team, I don't see it.
Who is the team that can do it, though? I said one in week four, and then I got off them, and now I'm thinking about the Bills again. I saw the way Josh Allen played in September and early October,
yes,
made me think. I don't know defensively. You know, obviously Trey White, put him on Tyreek Hill, hope for the best and think that, and hope that you can get some sort of Jalen Ramsey-like erasure. But then there's the rest of the team that might be the issue. And Allen could give them problems. The running game concerns me. But who is that team?
I think the most honest way to answer that question, I could name five teams that could do it,
yes,
but I think at the end of the day, do I think any of them will do it? And for me, the answer is no. Absolutely. Josh Allen, by the way, has been on fire the last 3 or 4 weeks. They could do it. Pittsburgh, you know, three times out of 10 could probably do it. Maybe the Saints, if they meet in the Super Bowl, could probably do it. But all of those, to me, are assuming variables and possibilities. The most realistic outcome for me is what we saw last February in Miami. And I believe that the Chiefs are going to be the first team to repeat since the Pats did in 38 and 39 Super Bowls.
So let me give you one off the books here, off the board, to use the old Joker's Wild phrase, okay?
And a triple.
And a triple. How about this one? Okay. The teams that gave the Chiefs the most problems in the playoff run last year, as we know, Tennessee gave them a nice scare in the AFC Championship game.
Twice up by 10.
Right. And obviously the San Francisco 49ers were up in the fourth quarter. So what do they have? They had a running game that was particularly
and a prodigious defense.
Correct. And also a quarterback that could play action you, and if with not making the mistake, beat you deep, right? Even though I know Jimmy G missed that shot to Emmanuel Sanders.
Oh, it was wide open.
So who's got a really stout running game and line and defense and quarterback that's not making mistakes right now? What about the Cleveland Browns? What about them? By the way, I think that's your answer. You can move on if you just want that side to be your answer.
The Browns have been a great story, and Kevin Stefanski has been phenomenal, and he's done a great job. At first, I thought you were talking about Indianapolis when you're talking about good defense.
I don't know. They've been way too inconsistent for me in Philly Riv. Philly Riv, you know, when you're pushing 40 and you got a toe injury that needs surgery, I think that's an expiration date that's approaching, quite frankly, for 2020.
Correct. Look, the Cleveland Browns are interesting. What we've really seen from Cleveland is a complete evolution over the last two-plus seasons, right? Because when they sort of came on the scene in Baker's rookie year, he broke Peyton Manning's rookie touchdown record, right? And now that team has completely turned to 180 and evolved into a run-first team. And we saw, let's just go back to week three of the regular season, Monday night game. Kansas City goes to Baltimore. Baltimore marches right down the field, takes off like, I think, 6, 7, 8 minutes off the clock. Mm-hmm. They stall in the red zone, kick a field goal. They give the ball back to the Chiefs, and I think they took 2 minutes to score a touchdown. So the problem for Cleveland, in my mind, going up against, and could they do it again? They're one of a few teams I give a puncher's chance. No question about it. But you have to sustain a drive if you're a run-first team for a long period of time with no mistakes. And then you have to cash in those drives. Whereas when you're playing Kansas City, all right, we went 3-and-out. We won't go 3-and-out 3 times in a row. It's much easier to score the way the Chiefs are going to score than the way the Browns have sort of set themselves up to score in terms of long, sustained drives where you have to make sure you don't get behind the chains. There's not a holding penalty. There's not a illegal formation. There's not one drop pass. You know what I mean?
Right. So you don't believe in the Browns. So that side that started the whole spiel here answer.
I'm not going to believe it until someone does it. That's just sort of my standard
philosophy. Did it against the Titans, I guess. So they did it against the Titans. If they do it against the Ravens, right, and then they do it against the Giants, those are their next two nationally televised games. By the way, what's more 2020 than flexing out of Cowboys, Niners?
I know you're going to say the Cowboys and Niners are out, the Browns and Giants are in.
Right. What's more 2020 than that? Right.
Nothing. But here's the thing.
Right.
You just talked about those two games. The Ravens aren't the Ravens from a year ago. And the problem with Baltimore is they sort of believed, okay, this one thing we did better than anybody arguably ever last year, we can do it again, which is run for 212 yards a game. And that's never going to happen. So the problem with the Ravens is they based 2020 on, okay, if we just do that again, then the other things will fall into place. Well, that thing was so singularly unique and out of whack with norms, that was the flaw in the ointment in my thought process, that you can't rely on something so incredibly outside the ordinary to happen time and time again.
So in the NFC, who do you like? Before I let you go, Trey, which one?
Yeah.
Who comes out of
it? Well, listen, I said all along this year, and I don't know how you felt about it, but because of the offseason where we didn't have one,
right,
what was really going to help would be a team that had a sustained coaching staff in place with a quarterback in place and a proven system that works.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's still New Orleans. And Sean Payton, think about this, Rich, and I know you know this, but like over the last 2 years,
9-0.
They are 8-0 with their backup quarterback.
Well, 9-0. 5-0
last year with Teddy Bridgewater, 3-0 this year with Taysom some of that.
Right, exactly.
And that to me, it shows you what the team is about and what the culture is about there. And I think that it's going to be the Chiefs, and more than likely it's going to be the Saints, and that could be a Super Bowl for the ages.
Yeah, I was counting the win against Philadelphia that I think is coming up, although I've never seen anything like that, man. Jalen Hurts could actually win this game. I shouldn't just chalk it up right here to seeing what we've seen.
The Eagles needed to do something.
But Carson
Wentz is a project for the offseason now. You can't fix him now.
I don't know, man. You know what I mean? Like, so,
yeah.
What do you think? What's more likely, Wentz or Cam getting back to MVP status. What's more likely?
Who's the second name? I'm sorry, I didn't
hear. Cam. You know, you got two former MVPs within just, well, I guess, you know, obviously Wentz was an MVP, but he was playing like one.
He would have been the MVP.
He would have been had he not gotten hurt. So
here's the thing about the Cam situation. Like, they're throwing for what? Like, last night he threw for a decent amount, but over the last three games, I think he threw for 76 yards. Again, that's a hard thing to sustain.
Right.
I believe if Wentz, because he's younger, and we've seen that sort of performance from him mm-hmm. in the past, I think that Wentz, if you can fix, because part of this is mental, right? I know people have been telling me he's still messed up with the whole Nick Foles thing. And then you get sacked, what, 10 straight games, at least three sacks. He's been taken down over 50 times already. I don't care who you are. Like, Sam Darnold got roasted for, I'm seeing ghosts. Every quarterback sees ghosts if they get hit that often. See Tom Brady in the AFC Championship game in 2015 in Denver. He saw ghosts in that game. You hit any quarterback enough, things change. David Carr never survived his rookie year in 2002 when he was sacked 76 times. I mean, you can't do it. So Carson is a reboot in the offseason.
So are we on a cadence for half-forgotten history? Is it a certain number of times a week or catch-as-catch-can
per Monday,
week?
Yeah, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Okay.
We just dropped our second episode with Emmett Smith today where he talks about mm-hmm. how he thought his marketing team had jinxed him and the halftime speech that turned around Super Bowl 28 when they were down 13-6.
Mm-hmm.
And we got three more episodes dropping next week.
Okay, and I like the logo with the football as the sands through the hourglass. Very well done, Trey. I like the whole.
Thank you,
the
sir.
Whole look.
I appreciate that.
You are welcome. If you need somebody on the show, I'm more than happy to sit in and do whatever you need. If that's something
well,
that you're
you know,
interested
funny.
In,
I
sir.
I want to do those things. We sort of have a. Long story short, we have a commitment to do a certain thing for a while, but then after that, we're going to be sort of branching out into those kind of things. And brother, you and I could tell some stories on our own.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Trey, anytime. Congrats on your pod and everything else going on with you.
Thanks, Rich. Always a pleasure. Happy holidays. And say it with me, everybody. Mm-hmm. Reese's Pieces.
Reese's Pieces.
There you go. Thank you very much. Trey Wingo right here.
Okay.
There you go. That's Trey Wingo. At Wingo Z on Twitter still. Right here on The Rich Eisen Show. I know the feeling. That's all I'm saying. I know the feeling of your identity is totally associated with the brand, and suddenly it isn't. And it's exciting, but it's also just like, what the hell just happened? I know the feeling. But it's a half-forgotten history that's set up for Trey Wingo. And I agree with the Chiefs. I kind of disagree about the Browns. Kind of like the Browns.
Higher register?
Kind of like them. No, I'm not going higher register. I'm not going higher register. I kind of dig what I'm seeing. Right? I like Nick Chubb. I like Kareem Hunt. I like that line. I like Baker Mayfield not making mistakes. I like it.
That's the key, obviously.
I like, five straight games without a pick. I like Myles Garrett. I like Olivier Vernon.
Yep.
I like them getting healthier on the back end. Looks like Ward might be back for Monday Night Football. I like him. How about that? 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Poll question is phenomenal. Your phone calls, 844-204-RICH. We'll talk about my son's NBA fantasy team, see if it's better than yours. And he's only 12. It's coming up. Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room. Collaborate live. Drawing, sharing, and building ideas with everyone on the same page. And make sure more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. Oh, baby, it is time for Yellowstone to be streamed by you. Season 3, Season 2, Season 1, all of them is streaming right now. It is a fantastic series starring Kevin Costner and worth your time right here on Peacock. See, I don't have to read the copy that's given to me. I can just do that.
Ad lib. That's professional right there.
It's ad-libbing. Sean Mitchell of the Rich Eisen Show staff, expertly working on this show from home, sent me, I guess, the GIF of that I did celebrating hitting the sting yesterday.
Oh, the one I described to a radio.
Apparently, apparently, I got that on my phone now. Although I know this sounds like something my may he rest in peace late father would say, but You have to help me figure out how to get that on my phone.
Oh, I got you. You know I got you.
You know what I mean?
Because DJ's the king of that.
I keep hitting save, and it's only saving as
a picture.
Yes. Yeah. Back here on the Rich Eisen
DJ
show.
DJ will teach you.
844-204-RICH is the number to dial. We're on the Mightier 1090 every day from 12 to 3 Eastern time. We're also on Sirius XM channel 211. I'm now, you know, I follow SpaceX on Twitter. SpaceX is about to launch the Sirius XM latest satellite.
Oh.
And I retweeted that live video asking if now's a good time to promote that the Rich Eisen show is on NBC Sports Audio Channel 211 on Sirius XM every day.
Did SpaceX respond?
I don't know. I think they're a little too busy. Right now, busy. It is T-minus 6 minutes and change to actually launch this thing. Although, I don't believe the millennial that's in charge of at SpaceX is also helping launch this baby.
Yeah, they're not pressing the button, the go button,
I don't know. Elon Musk might be demanding people multitask.
It could be like a guy like me with multiple screens, Rich. You don't know.
Oh, God, I hope you are not.
Come on.
Yeah. So what, like Elon Musk is like, what happened with that launch today? And then somebody's like, I don't know. I was looking at Doug the Pug.
The call dropped.
The call dropped. Doug the Pug.
Speaking of the call, let's take
Drop
one.
The call.
Peter in Cleveland Heights, Ohio. You're here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Peter?
Hey, Rich. Long time, first time.
Attaboy.
Love the show.
What's up?
I want to talk about this kind of ridiculous notion that sports analysts and media are kind of hinting that Joe Judge should be considered for Coach of the Year. And here's my argument for it. If he was the coach of the Browns or the Lions or the Jaguars and was 5-7, no one would be talking about it. Okay? Before Kevin Stefanski showed up in Cleveland, the Browns led the league in least amount of regular season wins, conference wins, division wins, least amount of 500 or better seasons,
yes.
Least amount of playoff appearances, and they're 9-3. They're 9-3
yes.
In the first wild card spot. I understand Tomlin. I understand Flores. I even understand McVay. Joe Judge doesn't sniff it. And when the Browns embarrass the Giants on national TV, no one's going to be talking about it.
I love your confidence because the last caller that called about the Browns was so like walking on eggshells.
Youngstown is a schmuck.
Look at you coming correct here, Peter. So, yes, it will come down to that game. How does that sound in terms of because, you know, there are too many people and Trey Wingo just said it too. Just don't believe in the Browns. I do believe in the Cleveland Browns. It does help, though, for Joe Judge, two things. One, he is in first place in his division. And I understand that's the division that if you were 9-3, you know, you'd be leading
that
division.
Division is a dumpster fire.
But also, not anymore, though. Not anymore. It was a dumpster fire.
When they go 8-8, no one's going to care. It's only because he's in New York.
That's true.
I'm sorry.
That's true, too, man. Don't forget, like, Justin Tuck was selling $5 footlongs. He certainly wouldn't have done that if he was a Cleveland Brown, although... You know, where we've been inundated with Baker Mayfield and empty stadiums, which I don't. Who's the last Cleveland? I don't recall Spurgeon Wynn having those progressive deals. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? So it's all turning.
Too.
It's turning for you. Thanks for the call, Peter. Thanks for being a fan, obviously listening and remembering the name of the guy from Youngstown. Would he call him a schmuck? Is that what he called him?
Schmuck on wheels.
I mean,
like Peter's a transplanted New Yorker. Sitting
but with
out
all
there,
due
maybe.
Respect to Peter, like.
Oh. Oh,
five of their wins are the Bengals twice, the Cowboys, the Jaguars, and the Eagles. Like, slow down, bro.
No.
Like feel good that you have nine wins, but understand who your nine wins are against.
So what?
They win the game.
They beat the Bengals when they had Joey Burrow, and Joey Burrow was throwing it around for 400 yards, and you play who's in front of you. At the time when the Cleveland Browns took on the Dallas Cowboys, that was week 4. That was the week before Dak
got hurt. By the way,
they beat the Cowboys when Dak was thrown for 500 yards. They beat the Cowboys up. They put damn near a 40-burger on them in the first half when everyone's like, all right, let's see what you got, Cleveland. Well, we saw what Cleveland had, didn't we?
They gave
you
up.
You can't just discount that because
64 points to the Bengals. Like, come on.
I don't care.
Like, relax.
You have to beat who's in front of you. You have to beat who's in front of you.
They lost to the Raiders.
I don't blame a Browns fan sitting there saying, we're 9-3 for the first time in forever.
And they almost lost to Jacksonville. So come on. Slow down.
Beat the Giants then. How does that sound? Beat the Ravens first. Because if Lamar comes in and starts slicing you up
there you go.
In a way that you you shouldn't be sliced up, then that's a problem. I still think they win the next two. Win the next three, and then the question, what about Pittsburgh? How about that? They should beat the Giants, and they should beat the Jets because they are, in fact, better than them. And they're better than the Ravens. They should beat the Ravens. That should happen.
You got to beat the teams you're supposed to
beat. Right, so they have beaten the teams that they had in front of them, including Indianapolis, by the way. That's a quality W.
That's a quality win.
All right. And then you have to beat the teams that you should beat once you have a record based on the teams that you shouldn't have lost to. Now you're now you go from shouldn't lose these to now should win. Huh?
They have won. Talk about quality wins.
Let me just say this. That Cowboys win in week four, at the time, a high quality win. To go into Dallas with the Cowboys already having their backs against the wall because they lost against the Rams. They got that win out of their you-know-what against Atlanta. And then they lost to Seattle, and they're 1-2. And you're sitting here saying, here's a team that could have been 0-3 if not for the luck of that spinning fidget spinner that Atlanta was the first team, unfortunately, to see all season. Now everybody's onto that, by the way. You saw that. The Ravens were ready for the Zuerlein fidget spinner. Yep. Okay. This past week. So Atlanta was the first one to just stare at that, like, what is that thing? So like the first time you ever saw a drone, you're like, what is that thing? Now you know it's a drone. At the time, Cleveland beating Dak and that team, that was huge. Because Dallas was like, what is Dallas really going to fall 1-3? Yeah, Dallas is going to fall to 1-3. And then they fell off a cliff because Dak got injured for the rest of the season. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Chris Brockman, let's unpack our poll question briefly here, because this is a dynamite one.
Let's do it. All right, guys, it's the 42nd anniversary of the famous Lufthansa heist at JFK Airport.
Yes.
$5.875 million stolen, $5 million in cash, $875,000 in jewelry, the equivalent of about $23 million now. The largest cash robbery committed on American soil at the time. Now, that got us thinking, Mike, Del Tufo actually threw out this suggestion.
Well done.
What's the biggest heist in sports?
And we biggest went back heist and forth, like, let's not do trades.
Right.
Nope.
So we decided to go players who got
basically
insane
stealing money.
Contracts and who never did anything after. So basically stealing money.
And the choices?
The choices are Gilbert Arenas, who signed a six-year, $111 million deal with the Wizards and then immediately got hurt and only played about 150 games the rest of his career.
Wow.
Albert Haynesworth signed that massive $100 million contract with Washington.
Crazy.
$41 million guaranteed and then was nothing afterwards. Mike Hampton signed an eight-year, $121 million deal with Colorado and then only won 21 games with the Rockies. Ended up winning 63 the rest of his career after that.
121,000 per outweek, me and Brockman figured out.
Per inning.
Per inning, I mean.
And then, got to put him on here, Bobby Bonilla's deferred contract. Got him $1.1 million for 35 years.
Still getting paid off.
Still getting paid for about another 40
years. And, of course, the Lufthansa heist made famous by the movie Goodfellas.
By the movie Goodfellas.
Henry, I want my money.
Maury the Wig Man was part of that caper. He'd been planning it, and he wanted his money. And then, of course, a bunch of people were buying things when they're supposed to get nothing. Don't buy nothing.
Couldn't listen.
Okay. And call us if we missed one at 844-204-RICH. Love the any poll question involving the Lufthansa heist. Fantastic. Bomani Jones on Kyrie and Tom Curran on the Patriots coming up. Because we were thinking about not putting Bobby Bowe's deferred payments on there.
Right.
That's the brightest, shiniest object. But nothing's worse than the Albert Haynesworth contract.
That was great. I remember when that happened.
Because he played for Washington, finishing with the Patriots, and then washing out. Went to Washington and then washed out.
But got 41 guaranteed.
Oh,
we're definitely forgetting some, though. So I'm going to be interested to hear.
We could put We could put Carson Wentz on this.
I was about to say, if three to five December 11th from now, we'll be talking about Wentz's contract like this.
Yes.
I already saw somebody post a photograph of Albert Haynesworth on Twitter. That wound up in my Twitter feed when Wentz got benched this week. Ooh. It was a photograph of Albert Haynesworth, which is, again, like I said, that's the clubhouse leader for worst NFL contract, period of all time. We got to look up Chris Davis's contract with the Orioles, but it can't be any worse than Mike Hampton's, right?
No, not worse.
Mike Hampton had a great season with the Mets and then cashed in with the Rockies.
That's what he got for leaving us.
And it was like, good luck, man. That slider, how's that going to work in the thin Rocky Mountain air where they need to put your baseballs in humidors to make it palatable to throw? But I'm Monty Jones on Kyrie Irving and so much more coming up next on the Rich Eisen Show. Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in a new virtual room, collaborate live, building ideas on the same page, and see more of your team on screen at once. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.